Picture yourself at flight level 390, 3 hours out of Gander. Nothing below you but water. The North Atlantic, 2,000 miles of it, with nobody down there and nothing overhead but stars. You made your last HF position report 14 minutes ago. The controller working your sector knows roughly where you are. Not precisely. Roughly. A 14-minute window is a lot of sky. That was the reality of oceanic surveillance for decades. And most pilots who fly domestic in radar contact from ramp to touchdown never really sit with how different it gets the moment you cross that coastline and leave the ground station network behind. I'm Vector on Clear Direct Radio Hangar. Today I want to talk about what changed that picture. Not in theory, not in proposal stages. In practice and in operation right now. A network of 66 satellites in low Earth orbit that tracks every ADS-B equipped aircraft on the planet, including the parts of the planet where there is no ground to put a receiver on. Before we get into it, a word from the people supporting this segment. AviationSoul.com makes aviation challenge coins that actually mean something, not souvenirs, milestones, first solo, private pilot, instrument-rated, certified flight instructor, the whole journey from student to wherever you end up. Beautifully made and built to last, AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the number 350 million square miles. That is approximately the surface area of the world's oceans. And until 2019, radar coverage over that entire area was effectively zero. Not because nobody tried. Radar has a fundamental constraint built into it. The Earth curves. A radar antenna on the coastline can see maybe 250 miles out to sea before the signal runs into the horizon. Beyond that, you're working with pilot position reports. Aircraft self-report their location. Controllers plot those positions on a paper strip or a computer track, watch the trend, and trust that the crew on the HF frequency is telling them where they are. The system worked. Mostly, the separation standards over oceans were built to account for that uncertainty. On the North Atlantic, the busiest oceanic airspace in the world, aircraft were separated by 30 nautical miles laterally and 1,000 feet vertically during the prime westbound and eastbound flows. You had to file into specific organized tracks. You requested altitude changes well in advance because the controller needed time to coordinate with other sectors and make sure everyone would still be clear by the time you moved. And if a controller wanted to know exactly where you were at any given second, they could not look it up. They waited for your next scheduled radio call. Here is what most people miss about that old system. It was not just inefficient. It was a significant ongoing economic problem for the industry. Airlines routing across the Atlantic are paying for fuel with every nautical mile of suboptimal routing. Aircraft want to fly the most fuel-efficient altitude for their weight and the most fuel-efficient track relative to the winds aloft. The North Atlantic jet stream is a moving target. The best track on a given day might be several hundred miles north or south of where the standard tracks are placed. But with wide separation standards and slow position updates, controllers could not safely compress aircraft close enough together to let everyone fly the optimal track simultaneously. Flights took suboptimal routes. They flew suboptimal altitudes. On a transatlantic route, an extra few hundred pounds of fuel burn is not trivial. Multiply that by 500 flights a day across the North Atlantic track system, 365 days a year, and the inefficiency starts adding up to a very large number. The industry wanted something better, so did the controllers, so did the regulators. The technology to build it would come from an unlikely direction. Go back to March 8, 2014. Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 departed Kuala Lumpur at 12:41 in the morning local time. 53 minutes after departure, the crew checked in with Ho Chi Minh Area Control, said goodnight, and disappeared. The transponder stopped responding. The aircraft turned southwest, crossed back over the Malay Peninsula, climbed, turned south, and flew for hours into the Indian Ocean. Secondary radar on the ground tracked it for a while as an unidentified return over the Strait of Malacca and into the Andaman Sea. After that, nothing. The only data anyone had was a series of automated timing handshakes between the aircraft's satellite data unit and a single Inmarsat satellite. Not GPS position data, not radar returns. Timing arcs. The satellite could measure how far away the aircraft was based on the delay in the signal, but not what direction. The investigation drew arcs on a globe, narrowed the probability by studying the aircraft's performance, and concluded with high confidence that the aircraft went down somewhere in the southern Indian Ocean. The search area was still the size of a small country. We have not found MH370, not the main wreckage. Pieces have washed ashore on islands and coastlines, but the aircraft itself remains on the ocean floor somewhere, and the exact location is still unconfirmed. MH370 never flew over the North Atlantic. But the accident defined the surveillance gap in terms everyone understood immediately. A wide-body jet with 239 people on board flew for more than 6 hours undetected, because there was no radar, no ground-based ADS-B receiver, and no infrastructure capable of seeing it. The tools existed to track aircraft everywhere else. They just did not exist over water. If the system I'm going to describe had been operational in March 2014, the search area would have been a GPS track, not a probability arc, a track. That system is Aireon. Let's break this down from the beginning. ADS-B, Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, is how most aircraft in controlled airspace report their position today. It works by having the aircraft continuously broadcast its GPS-derived position, altitude, ground speed, track, and identification. The signal goes out at 1,090 MHz on what is called the extended SQDR format. Ground-based receivers hear it, aggregate the data, and feed it to controllers. The system has been the foundation of radar replacement and supplement in domestic airspace across the United States, Europe, and Australia. In the United States, ADS-B out became mandatory in most controlled airspace on January 1, 2020. Ground stations require ground. That is the constraint. You can line every coastline on Earth with ADS-B receivers and you still cannot hear an aircraft that is 800 miles offshore at 35,000 feet. The signal propagates well, but the Earth curves in the way that the Earth always has. Here's the insight that Aireon was built on. If the receiver is in space, the geometry changes completely. A receiver in low Earth orbit looking down at the planet sees a footprint hundreds of miles across. A signal that cannot reach a ground antenna on a curved Earth can reach a satellite directly overhead with nothing in between. With enough satellites to provide continuous global coverage, you can hear ADS-B broadcasts from anywhere on the surface. You just need the satellites to already be there. Enter Iridium. Iridium Communications operates the only truly global satellite network. The original Iridium constellation, launched in the late 1990s, was a spectacular engineering achievement and an equally spectacular business failure. The company went through bankruptcy in 1999. 9 months after going operational, the assets were bought cheaply, the US military became a major customer, and the network kept running, but the original satellites were aging. Iridium Next was the full replacement constellation, 66 operational satellites plus spares in low Earth orbit at approximately 780 kilometers altitude. Each satellite cross-links with its neighbors, so data hops across the constellation without touching the ground until it needs to. The launches ran on SpaceX Falcon 9 rockets starting in 2017 and finishing in 2019. The constellation was going to be built regardless of what else rode along. Each Iridium Next satellite has a hosted payload bay. That is where Aireon came in. Aireon was formed in 2011 as a joint venture between Iridium and Nav Canada, the Canadian Air Navigation Service provider, the Irish Aviation Authority, the UK's National Air Traffic Services, and ENAV of Italy joined as partners. The idea was to fit each Iridium Next satellite with a dedicated ADS-B receiver payload. When the constellation was complete, you would have global ADS-B surveillance coverage. Aircraft would not need to change anything. They would broadcast exactly the same signal they always broadcast. The satellite would just be a new kind of ground station, one that happens to be orbiting overhead at 27,000 kilometers per hour. The technical challenge was whether a satellite at that altitude could hear a signal designed for ground receivers. Aircraft ADS-B transmitters are not powerful devices. The signal was engineered for distances measured in hundreds of miles, not hundreds of kilometers of altitude. The physics said it was possible. Getting the receiver sensitive enough while rejecting interference from other signals coming up from a populated planet below required careful engineering. Aireon spent the better part of a decade validating the design, running simulations, and eventually flying a demonstration payload before the full constellation went up. By April 2019, Aireon declared global coverage. Every ADS-B-equipped aircraft on Earth, flying anywhere on Earth, was potentially visible. The update rate over the North Atlantic is approximately 8 seconds on average. 14 minutes to 8 seconds. Think about that ratio. That is not an incremental improvement. That is a categorical change in what oceanic surveillance even means. That improvement translated directly into separation standards, working with ICAO and the relevant national authorities. NAV Canada and the European ANSPs began implementing reduced separation on the North Atlantic. Lateral separation came down from 30 nautical miles to 15 nautical miles. That means more aircraft can fly optimal routes simultaneously. Controllers can safely pack the tracks more efficiently because they actually know where everyone is in real time. The fuel savings from optimized routing are substantial. NAV Canada has published figures estimating the benefit to airlines runs into the millions of dollars in annual fuel savings across the fleet operating those routes. The transition did not happen overnight after the satellites went up. That is an important point. Controllers needed training. Procedures needed revising. ICAO had to develop standards for what they call performance-based surveillance, a framework for validating new surveillance sources against defined performance metrics rather than simply requiring a specific technology. Every national authority with airspace touching the North Atlantic had to formally accept space-based ADS-B as a valid surveillance input. That regulatory and procedural work ran in parallel with the technical deployment and took additional years after the system was technically operational. Now, let's be honest about the limitations, because there are real ones. Arian's data is only as good as the ADS-B signals it receives. ADS-B is a dependent system. The aircraft tells you where it is. The system believes it. Secondary surveillance radar, the conventional approach, generates its own independent position measurement by measuring the radar return. It can cross-check what the transponder says against what the radar sees. Space-based ADS-B cannot do that. If the aircraft's GPS is feeding bad data, the satellite network faithfully reports the bad position. The integrity monitoring built into modern GPS receivers catches most failures, but the independent cross-check is not there. Not everyone is broadcasting. Military aircraft in many countries do not transmit ADS-B at all, or transmit in modes that do not include position. State aircraft have exemptions in most regulatory frameworks. Older aircraft without ADS-B out capability remain invisible. On the North Atlantic, equipage requirements are strict enough that most of the traffic is covered. Globally, it is still a patchwork. There is also an authentication problem with ADS-B itself that Arian inherits. The protocol has no cryptographic verification. An aircraft broadcasts its identification and position, and the system accepts it at face value. On the ground, it is possible to create a false ADS-B target with readily available equipment. A satellite overhead hears spoofed signals the same as real ones. The aviation security community is actively working on authentication standards for ADS-B, and it is an area where the next generation of the protocol needs to be significantly stronger. But that is a problem for ADS-B everywhere, not unique to space-based reception. Finally, Arian is a commercial service. The air navigation service providers pay for it. Those costs flow to airlines through overflight fees. The business case works because the fuel savings from optimized routing exceed the surveillance costs. But this is a vendor relationship, not a public infrastructure. What happens when the Iridium Next constellation approaches end of life, or if the business relationship changes, is a question aviation regulators are thinking about now. There is a consumer-facing dimension to all of this that pilots interact with indirectly. Services like FlightAware and FlightRadar24 built their audiences tracking aircraft using ground-based ADS-B receiver networks. Those networks have gaps over oceans. Some of those services have begun integrating space-based ADS-B data to fill those gaps. If you have ever opened a flight tracker and watched a transatlantic flight holding steady position updates mid-ocean instead of going dark, you were seeing Arian data in the chain. Arian also maintains a forensic capability. In the event of an accident or a missing aircraft report, the historical data from the satellite network can be reconstructed to show exactly where an aircraft was and what it was doing. That capability alone represents a significant change in what accident investigators have available to work with. The MH370 search involved enormous resources, international cooperation, and years of effort, much of it built around the absence of data. The forensic record now exists for equipped aircraft flying anywhere. The long trajectory here points toward closing the surveillance gap entirely, not just over the North Atlantic, but across all oceanic routes, the Pacific, the polar tracks. The Southern Ocean approaches near the tip of South America and into the approaches around Antarctica. Aircraft that previously disappeared from screens the moment they left terrestrial radar coverage will be tracked continuously for the entirety of their flight. For pilots who spend careers flying domestic routes, this might seem abstract, but oceanic flying is where the stakes of surveillance failure are highest. The distance from help is greatest. The time between when something goes wrong and when anyone knows about it is longest. Closing that gap is not a technology story for its own sake. It is a safety architecture story. 66 satellites, 8-second updates, 15 nautical miles of lateral separation on the world's busiest oceanic route. One aircraft missing in the southern Indian Ocean that crystallized what the gap actually cost. And a network already running that means no future crew will vanish from the radar picture just because they left the coast behind. My technical sources include Aireon's published operational reports, ICAO documentation on performance-based surveillance standards, and coverage from Aviation Week and Space Technology. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. Stay curious.